being able to twerk it is one thing. Being able to twerk it in a level required to be in that video is a completely different animal. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like watching yourself play basketball on TV versus watching the dudes in the NBA.
Yeah, it's not even close. Like, you don't attempt it in that setting.
Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Dan Le Batard, twerk experts, Bomani Jones and Dominique Foxworth with us today.
Am I about to get canceled before the show does?
Let's get started.
Where do you think college football stands today?
So much strangeness around this story. Mark Emmert makes almost $4 million a year. Can't even get a seat at this table because you've got people grabbing at money all over the place, and not even in the Big Ten where they've canceled football. Is Jim Harbaugh okay with the idea of canceling football? Meanwhile, you've got Trevor Lawrence, who has maybe less reason to play a college football season than anyone in college football, being a leading voice on We Need to Play. And then you've got the conferences divided, just like America is, according to region, where the SEC and the ACC are going to hold out as long as they can. This is the part of this that I find most fascinating, though. As the presidents sit here and wonder whether to cancel their season, they're going to be able to file it under health of players and education and amateurism. And I wonder if these presidents, by camouflaging it in that, are actually getting away with, we cannot give in to the demands of these players for money. We have to kick this down the road 6 months so that we could get this union talk out of here, so we could get this money talk out of here, and so we could get the system back in the way that we want it. I genuinely don't know, as we sit here talking about this, whether the Big Ten presidents are actually trying to protect bodies or whether they're trying to protect their system.
Well, Dan, it's worth noting, though, the players in the Big Ten aren't even asking for money. That is how they differentiate their movement from the Pac-12 movement. I think the Pac-12 guys are the ones that have the right idea, because even just asking for help with health and safety is getting a crazy level of pushback. You might as well ask for money if they got to act like that when you just ask them to stop you from getting sick. Now, I think all these conferences are going to wind up canceling their seasons. And I'm just telling you how I would approach this if I was a university president. The question that I would have to be able to answer is, so what's our plan if somebody dies on our watch? What is our PR plan if somebody dies on our watch? Are we going to really be able to do what football does all the time when somebody gets hurt, which is just move it over to another field and keep on going like it's not happening? Do you really think you're going to be able to pull that off? I don't think they're going to be able to. We saw in Major League Baseball, they didn't even have a plan for if a team had an outbreak. I don't expect these colleges to have an understanding of what they're going to do in the face of worst case scenario. And Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports put a story out a few weeks ago that mentioned some guy who did his research who was like, look, if we do this on a mass scale, somebody is going to die. And I understand all these presidents who look at themselves and say, that's not something that I want to deal with. And I think ultimately it's going to be all of them. And if they don't see it right now, if they really do try to get out here and make it happen, good luck to you if that happens on your watch. If you're the guy that's got to explain, not just to that player's family, not just to the rest of that roster, but to America, why you were so damn insistent upon pushing through with this. Good luck to you if that's the game that you want to play. I personally would want no parts of it.
You said the key word right there, Bo, is worst case scenario. So there are many different frameworks and lots of math that goes into creating complicated ways for people to make very simple decisions. People who run very large businesses. I don't understand how they can get to this point and not be aware of any of them and be so surprised by the opportunity that's in front of them or the decision that's in front of them. I would understand being surprised and confused by a once in a century pandemic falling on you in March, but we've known up until now all these characteristics existed and they haven't been able to prepare for this as if they didn't know potential contingencies had to be accounted for. And now we're in a situation where they all seem lost and confused and they have not considered the worst case scenario on both sides. And to Bo's point, if death of a player or long-term damage to their vital organs, if that's something that you're comfortable with, then go, by all means, go right ahead and take that risk. But it's not something I would be okay with.
Man, their only plan was sign a waiver. Like, that seems to have been the way that they were going to account for this. And then they got pushback from players on the idea of signing a waiver. And one thing the Pac-12 players have been talking about is they're not even letting guys have representation before they literally potentially sign their lives away. So when everybody gets on the, hey, we want to play, hey, we want to play, why don't we just listen to what these kids want? Because there's some really bad ideas directly in front of them, and they don't have access to things that young people or adults typically have access to before they make decisions like that. They don't have the advisors around them before they go make these decisions. But you greedy bums just want football so bad that you're like, yeah, no, just go on out there. They say they want to do that. As my boy Michael Felder says, they also say they want to play when they get concussions. You want to just throw them out there then too?
Well, I love the idea of this, though. This is the one that you're willing to grant the players a voice on? This is the one that you're going to align with labor on? All the time in sports, you get the customer aligned with management because labor's fouling up what management and the customer wants. Here, you've got the rare instance, things are changing so much that the customer is lined up with labor on this one. Yeah, they want to play. Why shouldn't they die for my entertainment? Because I want to see Ole Miss against Vanderbilt.
And you have to love the fact, by the way, though, the we want to play guys, when all of a sudden they got together with the we want to get paid guys, and I wake up in the morning and I see that, I can't imagine how confused some of y'all are. People that tweet like bots, they was all about hashtag we want to play, and now it's we want to play, yeah, but we want some other stuff. Then people didn't know what to do.
Your point about signing waivers is an important one, though, because they've spent all this time fighting against the professionalization of college athletics, fighting against the players being unionized, fighting against the players having representation or the players being treated like employees. The irony that that is jumping up to bite them now, because this would be so much easier. They would have so much more safety. They would be protected from the liability of possibly killing somebody on their job, because if there was a union that existed, if they allowed these people to be treated like employees, then you could actually negotiate with someone and agree to something that would protect you from the fact that you are putting these people at danger. That's one thing that happens in other professional sports like the NFL and the NBA. Remember all those negotiations that were going on? That's what was happening. That's the point of a union. Unions protect players, but they also protect leagues. If they had a centralized body to negotiate this and agree to this, then the colleges, universities, the presidents would be absolved of all this guilt, because they could just point at the union and say, yep, they agreed to it. You see that happen in football all the time.
Yep, but the number one principle I think is worth knowing, we're learning about the NCAA, as much as keeping them broke is the lifestyle at all times, the biggest thing for them is don't listen to them, right? Don't listen to what they say. They don't even want to be put in a position where they have to listen to what the guys have to say, because if they start listening, holy smokes, they might actually start believing some of the things they say.
Does Ramon Laureano deserve a big suspension for trying to fight all of the Astros?
All right, and breaking all of the protocols. No punches thrown, but all of the coronavirus protocols get broken here, because you've got a situation with the Astros throwing at somebody else as opposed to being thrown at. And this escalates a little bit, but then the hitting coach in the other dugout says something reportedly about Laureano's mother. And then he tries to fight everybody, and there's a wall of people there. That seems unwise for a number of different reasons, not the least of which there are sort of rules everywhere that this contact is not allowed in baseball. What's the dumbest part of this, guys? Because there are a number of layers of dumb here.
Yeah, I was just feeling the same way. It's like, I hate so many parts about this. Like, I understand we like fights and they're funny, but this just is despicable. Like, they're throwing at a guy because he is on a team with a player that snitched on them. So if you wanted to fight the player who snitched on you, go fight him. Why you gotta throw baseballs at him? And then it escalates to a point where he's charging the bench, which obviously is very stupid. I mean, coronavirus aside, it's just stupid to charge a bench by yourself. But I think the part about this I hate the most is that the coach was talking trash and was backing up. Like, I feel like you can't beckon someone over to your sideline and then begin to take steps back. Like, I think that you need to square up. Like, that's how we used to do it any other time. From the time I was 8 all the way to the time that I probably stopped participating in nonsense like this in my mid-20s was, if you have a problem with somebody, you clear out the locker room and you let them go to work. And I don't know why you get to be a coach in this situation. Can you imagine that in any other sport where it happens enough in baseball that it is a staple of baseball? Can you imagine in any other sport if your man Jeff Van Gundy was on the sideline? Oh, yeah, he had that one situation where he was on a man's leg. Yeah.
But he went into it. Now I'm a little confused here. I need y'all to run this video again. Could you start running it? Because I keep hearing all this stuff about this dude who tried to fight all the Astros. And that's not what this video is. Show me when he started trying to fight.
Whoever it was.
Does that look like a man to you that was trying to fight? A man that's trying to fight right there is not getting tackled by one dude. He didn't want to try to fight. He wanted to try to look like he was going to fight. And then once somebody turned up, he was like, all right, you got me. You got me. I'll go down. I'll go down. That looked like Brett Favre and Michael Strahan on that record-breaking sack. That's the dumbest part about it. If you actually go run the risk of catching the Rona, at least go down swinging. Then we'll just go down there and get hugged by some dudes.
Yeah, you got to fire a shot at the first man. Like, you're running over there. You know you got to fight the whole team. You got to fire a shot at the first man. You stepped in front. You want to tackle it. Catch it. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, let me tell you something. The people I know who really about that fight life tell me that they learned very early that they ain't never going to get hit first. Like, if that dude really wanted to fight, the last thing he's going to do is let somebody get a hand on him first.
Dominique, to your point, though, about coaches involved in fights, might this be before his time, Bomani, if we show him Pedro Martinez Don Zimmer? Don Zimmer, you know, because this is what you're advocating for? Yeah. You want somebody to be out there like Don Zimmer fighting Pedro Martinez? No, you say the yo mama jokes, and then you run back in the dugout so we don't have to watch things like this.
Mm-mm. Talk that talk. Catch that smoke. Simple.
Coming up next on my Soul Stevie show,
I respect a dude who's like, I ain't taking this L just because y'all want me to. And that's exactly the posture that Damian Lillard took right there. He's like, yeah, you're right. I missed some shots here. But the only reason they care that I missed these shots is because I be out here making so many shots. So all this is respect to me. And he's absolutely right. Like, you think you got him? Even when you got him, he's explaining to you, there's only one reason why you want to get me. And you know what? I can relate.
Do you think we've seen the last of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid playing together?
Seriously? You guys are asking that question now? I thought we were going to wait until we got into the playoffs and then they lost and underachieved on the most underachieving team in the sport this season and then started asking those questions. But Ben Simmons has now gotten hurt, and I do think we're going to get some answers based on how Joel Embiid and this team look going forward without Ben Simmons, because I would build around Joel Embiid. I would be ready to get rid of Ben Simmons if it brings me a haul to put around Joel Embiid. But I think this team is super weird, guys. It's super hard to understand what this team is going to be. And these two guys not playing doesn't tell us any more than these two guys playing until we see playoff games without Ben Simmons.
But yo, the weirdest thing about them is I think that all of us believe that each of those guys has superstar talent. None of us believe that those guys are that far away from being superstars, right? Like, we're all in that same place. Neither of us feels like you can trust either one of them. You can't trust Ben Simmons because he won't shoot, and you can't trust Joel Embiid because of the fluctuations in his weight and his conditioning and everything else. And that's what's got to stink for the Sixers, is that if they did decide they wanted to move one or the other, I'm not even sure how you decide which one. Because once you do that, you have empowered that other guy to know he's the dude that runs everything. Is either one of those guys qualified to run everything in that way for an NBA franchise? So maybe it's the last time they play, but if it is, I don't know what the next thing is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, and you have the injury history for a big man and Embiid to pile on top of that. But then what is the move? I guess they're going to get rid of Brett Brown, but they don't really have the cap space or flexibility to do anything else. Were they going to trade Al Horford? Somebody want Tobias Harris for those big bucks? Like, there is no other move. They better figure out or bring in some sort of coach that can make this work, because there is no other move other than trying to move a superstar for a haul. But the only person who wins that trade is the team who gets the superstar every single time. So I don't know what an organization that seems to be geared around front office decision making, at least for the last decade or so, they've been focused on the front office decision making as the way they're going to run this organization. I'm not sure what the front office is going to do this offseason, and I'm not sure if nothing is the right answer.
Now, here's the thing I'm going to tell you, though. I don't know if it's the last time that Simmons and Embiid have played together, but I do feel pretty confident it's the last time either one of them is going to get coached by Brett Brown. That dude is done in this town.
Who won their war of words this weekend, Dame or the Clippers?
All right, so Patrick Beverley is a professional irritant. He would be the face of NBA starting mediocrity if not for the existence of the Morris brothers. But Patrick Beverley is in this shot here, really bothering Damian Lillard at the end of this game. On the bench, Damian Lillard is missing a couple of shots, and Patrick Beverley, you'll see him in a moment. a couple of free throws late, really enjoying this misery. They were saying Dame time, Dame time. There is one of the Morris brothers there as well. Let's check in here at the end of the game with Lillard missing this shot. Lillard scored 51 last night, by the way, in a different game. And then after the game, you saw Beverly there waving bye-bye. Lillard is here to remind you that he has waved bye-bye to Patrick Beverly and Paul George in more meaningful circumstances.
Asking me about Patrick Beverly, who I sent him home before at the end of a game. Paul George just got sent home by me last year in the playoffs.
It also got extra cold on social media between Paul George's girlfriend and Damian Lillard's sister. Yeah, it was ugly. Dominique, what is it that you made of this back and forth?
I mean, I hate to pick a winner, but because that discourages people from continuing to do this, and it is incredibly entertaining. I mean, you can see my man Kevin Durant, who's not playing right now, who's getting into Twitter beef that is endlessly entertaining. But I think you have to go with Damian Lillard because he could point to those games. What Patrick Beverly is mimicking is Dame Lillard ending playoff series with a shot and putting them all to sleep. So no matter what they say in words, Dame Dollar can point to his on-court performance, which has surpassed both Paul George and Patrick Beverly. And I guess we're including the Morris brother in this too, him too.
I mean, I don't know what exactly Dame Lillard's done in the postseason, honestly, that Paul George has not. That thing with Russell Westbrook was in the first round, let us not forget. But this is what I do have to say about this as it goes. One, Lillard looks a little bit salty because you know, he gets out there, he gets his head on people. They had a little something to say to him about it. He got salty about it. But man, I respect a dude who's like, I ain't taking this L just because y'all want me to. And that's exactly the posture that Damian Lillard took right there. He's like, yeah, you're right. I missed some shots here. But the only reason they care that I missed these shots is because I be out here making so many shots. So all this is respect to me. And he's absolutely right. Like, you think you got him? Even when you got him, he's explaining to you, there's only one reason why you want to get me. And you know what? I can relate.
Do you question if we overreacted to this pass by Luka?
All right, the evolution physically of basketball is crazy. Antetokounmpo now spin moves from the three-point line and dunks. Ben Simmons will cave in your defense. Joel Embiid is a ridiculous physical specimen. And now you've got Luka doing things like this that are hard to understand. Late in games, confidence casual with the basketball. Antetokounmpo is a very large defender. It doesn't matter. Through the legs. James Harden does this one all the time.
You said James Harden does this all the time because I'm really not sure. And I'm not questioning whether or not you're telling the truth. I'm just making the point that if James Harden does this all the time, yes, we are overreacting a little bit. I got no idea why, you know what I'm saying? But we are.
I mean, there's no argument here. Like, it's clearly an overreaction. Like, of all the things that you just went down the list of saying, you said somebody is 360 from the free throw line and other people doing Zion Williamson is jumping out his shoes. We got some real explosive athletes. Like, this was an impressive play. But moments after, everybody was all drooling all over themselves for this Luka pass. Some people came with this montage of James Harden doing it 12 different times. It was impressive, but let's cool it.
Yo, it's crazy because Luka is so good. He's so, so good. I don't think it's possible to say too much about how good he is, except every day people find a way to do just that.
They was comparing Luka to LeBron his rookie year. You remember that?
Yes. Yes, I am very aware that his rookie year people were comparing him to LeBron. I used to do a TV show with one of those people.
Tonight at 8 p.m., Pacers and Heat.
All right, so I am intrigued because several members of our radio show and TV show will be in the virtual fan audience in the VIP section. And this is because TJ Warren and Jimmy Butler had a back and forth. Now, before the bubble, Stu Gotts of our radio show said TJ Warren is someone who could get you 45 any night. And I laughed at that because TJ Warren, to that point, had never gotten 45 on any night. But then the first time he held a basketball and went into the bubble, he got 51. And now he's going crazy. He's the best player in the bubble. So Jimmy Butler had this to say about TJ Warren, but this isn't holding up real strong right now.
Did you notice the middle finger from him, and was the blowing of the kiss?
He's soft.
He's not even in my f-ing league, like nowhere near me. And if I was their coach, I would never put him on me ever again. He's like, no, put somebody else on me. Cause I'm a Taz up every time we play. So he's trash.
In Jimmy Butler's defense, though, he said that T.J. Warren couldn't guard him. He didn't say that T.J. Warren score 50. Still remains to be seen.
He's trash. Now, both players are questionable tonight. I don't know if you're going to get to see either one of them, but Bomani, are you intrigued?
So y'all all going to the game and ain't nobody asked me if I wanted to come?
Evidently.
That's all I heard in this. Like right before we got out here, y'all rattled off all these names that I know damn well you wouldn't want to hang out with more than you want to hang out
Poppy,
with me. How come nobody invited me?
Izzy Gutierrez, Pablo, evidently. Pablo. Dominique, are you intrigued?
Also not invited. Let's go through that list again.
That's what I'm saying.
Poppy, there's racism. Racism. This is clear and obvious racism.
Did y'all even bother to ask Roy if he wanted to come?
Huh? I'm not invited. What about me?
You turned down the invitation.
I wouldn't invite you either.
We're out of time here today. If you want more Dominique Foxworth in your life, The Undefeated is where you can read him. Get Up, First Take, all over the place you can find him. Also, Bomani Jones, The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast. You need to be checking it out. Do so now.
You know, or you can't find me at that Heat game, which is where I should be, bringing up property value. I thought they wanted stars out there.